Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Today we are going to talk about the future of student loans and how it all depends upon the Senate. So the House just passed their own version of student loan reform. They passed it in the Big Beautiful Bill Act. It's literally called that. So, you know, it's kind of funny. Sometimes I get replies to our email newsletter and some people were like, "You jerk, you know, why are you using the Trump administration's language?" Well, first of all, I try to keep it as down the middle as I can, observing what's going on with student loans, but also it's literally called that. So it's literally called the Big Beautiful Bill Act. So what does it do? What has the House already passed? Basically, I've talked about it a little bit on this podcast already. It would turn everything about student loans for existing borrowers into two plans. One is the old IBR plan, which is 15% of income for 25 years. The other is 10% of income for 30 years, called the RAP plan, Repayment Assistance Plan. Now, it is not that simple. Technically, the RAP plan, the RAP plan, not the good kind of RAP, just the student loan kind of RAP, LOL. So the RAP plan is 1 to 10% of income, actually, and it's 1 to 10% of AGI without this discretionary income definition. You just get $50 a month per kid, and that's it. So the discretionary income definition, in some ways, for IBR, for some people, that could actually be better with the IBR plan, depending on how large your family size is. And depending on how many years left you have till forgiveness, it depends on a lot of things, frankly. So we've got the RAP plan that you could choose from, or the old IBR plan. That is what the House GOP has passed. No, it's not law yet. The Senate gets to weigh in. The House GOP does a lot of things in this bill, not just about loan repayment. They would cap borrowing at just $150,000 for professional school. So graduate school would be capped at $100,000. This is going to result in half of all graduate programs in the country closing or more if it were to pass. I cannot stress how serious this is. You know, $150,000 is lower than the loan limits of the 2000s, like early 2000s, at least for professional school. So if you take the government out of graduate school into that extreme of a way, a couple things will happen. The only time that middle tier and above schools will get private financing is either if you're going to the top ranked school, or if you have the very best cosigner parents in the, like, credit wise in the world, or if there's not a recession going on. If there's a recession going on, you're not getting financing for a lot of graduate programs, period. So $150,000 loan limits, think about the cheapest dental school in the country. As far as I'm aware, I think it's still East Carolina, but I might be wrong in that. That program, if you borrow, you know, $25,000 a year times four, you need living expenses $20,000 at least a year times four. So 80 plus 100, you're already over the limit. And I think the cost for East Carolina dental school is much higher than that. I'm just riffing on the top of my head. So, you know, dental school, vet school, medical school, anybody who's not already enrolled, literally, like when I recorded this podcast, if you're not enrolled in that program already, you would be stuck with $150,000 borrowing limit if this bill were to pass, which means only kids from middle income and upper middle income families really could go to graduate school, really. I mean, like, that's calling a spade because it is. And it also eliminates PSLF effectively for all physicians that are not already enrolled in medical school while I'm recording this. That's really concerning. I mean, it's really concerning. So if you think about just the future of loans in general, at least they do preserve some things like old IBR and the PSLF for people that are already in it. It's obviously a pretty big deal. It's a really shocking, very big deal. Thinking about what will happen now in the Senate, swing votes. Who are the swing votes? How will they vote? What will they want in this bill? So first of all, the majority leader, Senator Thune, has already said that the Senate's going to come out with its own version. Now, that's on the whole bill overall. It doesn't necessarily mean about the pieces. And primarily, the senators are concerned about Medicaid cuts, and they're concerned about deficits. Those are the two areas that people have voiced the loudest concerns on. We're going to see probably big changes on those two things. But they're kind of talking out of both sides of their mouth, the Senate is, at least right now. And the reason for that is, how can you simultaneously be concerned that you're cutting too much to Medicaid while also talking about how the deficit spending is too big in the bill? Now, I guess technically, you could probably hold that position if your view is that the tax cuts should be less so that there's lower deficit. So in other words, you have higher tax rates and then you cut Medicaid a little bit less, but maybe you really rein in the tax cuts or something. It's really hard to say, right? Because it seems sort of like everybody wants everything, but you can't have everything in this kind of a bill. So what factions are going to win? That's the big question. Now, if we think about what they want in the Senate on education reform, the chair of the Education Committee in the Senate is Senator Cassidy of Louisiana. He has said very similar things to what the House is saying on student loans. So he's talking about wanting loan limits, simplifying income-based repayment, talking about how they need to rein in, you know, the federal government's role in the student loan markets. So, you know, in a lot of ways, that kind of sounds like what the House is asking for. And remember that their primary problem with this is it's really the Medicaid cuts and the deficit part of things, not something else. Now, one big X factor on the Senate taking up this bill is if the courts somehow strike down the SAVE plan independently of the Senate, then the Senate and the House are in real trouble with this bill in terms of the impacts on student loans, because they are counting $300 billion in repealing the SAVE plan, and they're counting that as part of their savings to pay for the huge tax cuts they're doing. So if a court comes around and says, hey, SAVE is illegal, and the courts come out and say this first, I'm not so sure that the CBO would allow them to count those $300 billion of savings in the bill, and they might have to do something very different to be able to pay for it. And that could significantly impact the bill and cause potentially a rewrite with the student loan section if the SAVE plan does get struck down in the courts before they're able to pass the bill. Now, if they're able to rush it through faster than the courts, then that we might be able to see they would probably stick with some similar version to the House, what they've proposed. Who are the swing votes in the Senate? So you have Murkowski and Collins. So Murkowski is a senator from Alaska. Collins is in Maine. They tend to vote against most of the things, they tend to vote no on a lot of things the Republican caucus tries to do, because they're two of the most moderate members of the Republican caucus in the Senate. Mitch McConnell, now that he is free from being leader, is able to sort of voice his opinions a lot more, and he's voted against the Trump administration's programs a lot more, believe it or not, than he has in the past this term. Let's just pretend that those are three votes that vote no, okay? They could still pass the bill, right, with the tie-breaking vote as Vice President J.D. Vance now. Anyhow, say that's the vote, it would pass. In my mind, the question really goes down to what does someone like Senator Tom Tillis do? Senator Tillis is in for a tough re-election in 2026. You know, it being an off-cycle election, President Trump not on the ballot, you know, an area that's got a lot of, you know, highly educated voters, right? A lot of big suburbs and places like Raleigh and Charlotte. And the weird part about the sort of post-Trump political coalition and the Republicans is you almost see like a inverse, it seems, happen with midterm elections, where it used to be Republicans would do really well in a midterm election because, you know, the higher income or highly educated voters would show up in larger numbers. And those folks at the time, like, kind of voted a little bit more Republican than Democrat. And so that they would outperform in the midterms because it was a low turnout election. Now it sort of seems like it's a little bit the reverse. Like, higher educated voters are leaning more towards the Democratic Party. And when you have a midterm election, there's lower turnout. Like, a lot of the MAGA voters sit home because President Trump's not on the ballot, and then Democrats outperform. So he's definitely going to be looking at his 2026 election hopes, and he needs to simultaneously not get a primary challenge, which right now he's fine for. He probably won't get one. But then he's going to be having to think towards the general election for him and saying, you know, how do I pass something that, you know, won't cost me my seat? And I think that that's definitely something that he's thinking about. In terms of the student loan aspect of things, what would potentially be open for discussion in the Senate? I do think that these senators are getting pressure and a lot of phone calls right now, especially from institutions in their state, letting them know how those institutions would be negatively impacted. If you are, you know, a Senator Tillis, for example, you're getting a lot of phone calls from UNC, Duke, I think High Point, Elon, right? All these like different universities that would have to drastically lay people off if they capped loan limits at 150K and 100K for graduate students. I guarantee you that all of those schools are calling his office a lot right now. And if you live in North Carolina, feel free to contact his office, because he's the one that's going to be one of the swing voters in all of this. I think that they can make this bill far less damaging in terms of economic mobility if they simply said, let's have 300K loan limits and 200K for graduate school if you took out a Pell Grant in undergrad. That would be something that would not cost very much. It'd be pretty limited in terms of who would qualify for that, but it would allow people that would have a harder time qualifying in the private loan markets to be able to borrow more. But who knows if they do that, right? I do think that you're going to see the biggest pushback in the Senate on loan limits on this higher ed bill. If they do successfully pass it, what does it mean for student loan borrowers? What does it mean for you and your loans? You know, I think that we want to see if they modify the RAP plan at all. Do they make it shorter? So, for example, the Senate wanted the repay plan. That's what the Senate wanted for the one plan to rule them all. The Senate just said, let's just have the repay plan because that's what President Obama did in the very last months of his office. He passed the repay plan through executive action. So if it was good enough for President Obama, that should be a bipartisan consensus that that plan's good enough. Problem with that is no married filing separate. So that's pretty painful for married borrowers in that case. But they don't want, like I've heard from some people in the House, that the very word forgiveness in the House is toxic right now. You cannot say the word student loan forgiveness in the House without getting a visceral response among members in the Republican caucus that want to shut that down. And they want to make sure that there are no cancellation efforts of any kind that could go through in the future. And so they are trying to make sure from a tax perspective that they are reimposing the tax bomb in 2026, for example. They are trying to make it clear the Secretary of Education has no power whatsoever to introduce new IDR plans. That power only rests with Congress. They're putting that in the legislation. And I mentioned they're removing any residency or fellowship programs counting for PSLF if you're not already a borrower, basically. Again, good news is PSLF still preserved, at least so far, for folks who are already pursuing it. But folks for the future might have a lot of difficulty figuring out whether or not going to, you know, some of these programs is even worth it. Because if you're paying full freight, I think what's going to happen is some of the schools are going to pretend like this bill, if it passes, which I think it's like a 60-70% chance that it passes, some of the schools are going to pretend that nothing ever happened. Some of the schools are just going to pretend that this bill didn't even pass and they're just going to keep the prices where they're at, or maybe lower them a little bit and just see what happens. But the problem is they have to get the financing to get the people into the classes. The money is due at the start of the semester. So that will be a fascinating test to see what happens. And, you know, the schools also have this weird incentive to finish out, you know, so for example, somebody who's already in dental school right now, they could ride out the rest of their 3 years borrowing grad plus loans to the max. So you're going to have this real weird situation, honestly, where like I could see the tuition charged based off the year you entered the program could be radically different. I mean, it's just going to be absolutely nuts in terms of higher education strategy, in terms of what they are going to have to charge their students and how they're going to do it. Nobody in the entire country, I don't think, is going to be willing to pay NYU dental school $100,000 for 1 year of dental school without IDR as a fallback option. So, you know, what happens to that kind of a program that's, you know, has hundreds of people attend in a class? Do they just limit it to 100 because they've got 100 people that they can find that are willing to pay that? Or do they, you know, cut their tuition by 70% or 50% or something? I mean, it's just going to be really crazy to see what happens with the graduate education market if this happens. Because, you know, again, same thing with like pharmacy school. Last I checked, the pharmacy school acceptance rate is something like 90% overall, because they created so many programs, and so many of these programs are relying on, you know, income-based repayment for people to make ends meet. And so, you know, if you have like a Toro University for pharmacy school that's charging a ton of money for the program, does that program just shut down if this bill passes and they cap graduate school borrowing? It wouldn't shut down immediately because, you know, people would be able to finish out their programs according to the bill if you're already enrolled. But it kind of also creates a weird problem. Like, what happens if you have a second year class of pharmacy school students that's paying full freight with the grad plus program, but then the following year can only afford to pay like one third as much because they have to finance it through private financing? So like, there could be some real crazy collapses that happen in graduate school programs that just come out of nowhere that leave people stranded trying to finish their degree, and then they could potentially have to transfer out to a different school. I mean, it's just going to be a mess. Like, I think they are really underestimating how painful this is going to be for universities, how bad it's going to be for employment at those universities. It's going to throw a ton of people into unemployment. And that doesn't actually impact current, like, existing borrowers that are done. Like, if you've already graduated, you know, again, this is a controversial thing to say. Well, it's probably not controversial. I think it's just reality. This is going to be a really good bill for people who already have their degrees in terms of your earnings, because what happens is this bill is just going to crush the supply of new graduates. And so suddenly, if you have the spigot completely turned off or slowed way down for new graduates entering your field, suddenly you have way less competition. You have way less labor supply competing with you. Employers will have a lot harder time finding qualified people with your degree, and they will have to pay them more when they find them. Again, that might not be something that you want still, because you care about, maybe, for example, if you care about having, you know, a diverse workforce more, or if you care about the next generation of dentists or veterinarians or physicians or lawyers or whatever, you might think, well, that's, you know, even if I make more money because there's fewer people graduating, that's still not something that I support. Or maybe you do support it. It's just really interesting to think about all the unintended consequences of this, right? That's what always happens with student loans, is there's always these great intentions for anybody that passes anything with student loans. And then you pass it, and then you find out there's all these massive unintended and sometimes unwanted consequences as a result. So we have just got to wait and see. I do believe we'll see something by July on the Senate and what they're going to do with higher ed and their version of the bill. And it'll be really interesting to see, do they propose their own version of student loan forgiveness or, you know, student loan reform in their own version of the bill? Or do they just defer to the House and go with what the House has proposed? And, you know, my prediction is the biggest change we'll see is on loan limits, because of just the absolute catastrophic consequences it would have for so many local communities, so many universities, so many programs. It would be extremely painful, kind of like how they're thinking about walking back some of the cuts to Medicaid. They're thinking about what that would actually mean in practice, and they're worried about the political consequences of doing something like closing a bunch of rural hospitals, for example. We will be monitoring this for you. If you have questions, go to studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. I hope you have a wonderful start to your summer. I hope you're going somewhere nice and fun with family and or friends. And if you need a refresh on your plan because of this chaos going on, we'd love to give you one. To my knowledge, we're the only place out there that's already built a detailed calculator of the RAP plan. And we're the only place that I'm aware of that's like already in depth following all of the potential outcomes that could happen based off of all the different reform proposals that are out there. We can walk you through plan A, plan B, plan C, et cetera. The good news is there's always ways to save money. The only question is, you know, how many paths do we have? So if you have any questions, reach out to us via the voicemail link if you want, or by just getting a custom plan if that's what you need, or reach out to your planner at SLP Wealth if you're a client over there. Hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. Thank you for listening to the Student Loan Planner podcast. Are you on the free Student Loan Planner email list? If yes, you can upgrade your experience and discover student loan loopholes so good they might get repealed if I talk about them publicly. Find out my very best thought leadership that I really just can't be super open about anymore, unfortunately. If you want to get our very best tips, not just the ones that I can share for free, go to studentloanplanner.com/insider to get a special discount for your year membership. That's studentloanplanner.com/insider and get our very best dozens of bonus content and tips that's going to save you money and get you out of student debt faster. And if you're already an SLP insider, please reply back to those emails and let me know how I can make it even more valuable.